The Daily Connect Podcast.
And I'm Stephen Scott, and it's Tuesday, the 9th of October, 2018. Thank you so much for downloading the podcast. I'm going to tell you about what you've been saying on the show. Chris Wallace, our producer, dropped in today to tell us what you'd been talking about, and also what's going on with the results of our Daily Connect poll, which is ongoing, asking you the question this week, do you use Braille? It's a good question, actually, in 2018, because you would think lots of people use Braille. I hear this all the time from sighted people that say, oh, Braille's everywhere. Everyone uses Braille. The actual fact is that only 4% of people who would read Braille do read Braille. Interesting, isn't it? But what does our poll suggest? Does it tell us anything different? Well, Chris is going to drop in later. And as it is National Braille Week, which is why we're bringing this topic up, we're going to be hearing from a society which helps blind people play chess through Braille chess. Rather interesting approach to that. So that's coming up. But first, we get into our Connect conversation this week, and I'm sure it's going to invite a lot of discussion. This one is all about school. Specialist versus mainstream education. What was your experience growing up? Mine was a mixture of mainstream and mainstream with additional support. But what about you? What did you think of your upbringing with your school? Did you go to a specialist school? Did you go to mainstream? And if you did, what did you think about those experiences? Well, that's what we ask our panel today on the Daily Connect podcast. We have three people with us today. We have John, Victoria and Stacey, who join us all to discuss specialist versus mainstream education. Welcome to you all. Thank you for being here.
You're welcome.
It's a great pleasure.
Good to be here.
So today on the Weekly Connect, we thought we'd talk about mainstream versus specialist education. It's an interesting time because a lot of parents are deciding at this point that, you know, the school that they may be putting their child into, and for blind children and partially sighted children, it's often a bit of a question mark. What's the best route? So I thought it'd be interesting to go around the table with a few of you and get your experiences and your thoughts on those. Stacey Rowe, we'll start with you. What's your experience? Is it mainstream or specialist for you?
So I was always educated in mainstream education. So I have no experience of special education. Primary school was always mainstream education. I don't think that was ever up for debate. But when it came to secondary school, it was a big deal in terms of where should I go. My family were very keen for me not to go to a special school. Having said that, my mother didn't want me to go to a mainstream school either, because I think she was quite worried about bullying and things like that, and particularly, but I was, you know, about 12 or something, and I was adamant that actually I wanted to go to the mainstream school because I wanted to be with my friends, my peers. And in the end, that's where I went, and it was fine, absolutely fine.
Yeah, I mean, a similar experience to me to some degree, because, you know, I started life off in mainstream school and mainstream primary, and then moved on to secondary school, and it was a fight. My mother had this fight in her saying, you will not go to specialist school. And, you know, I've never looked at it that way before, actually. You know, is it something that perhaps she was uncomfortable with rather than me ever being uncomfortable with? Never thought of it that way. Victoria, what's your experience?
Hi. Well, I had a pretty interesting experience because I was a partially sighted kid in a mainstream school to start off with before I lost my sight completely. And then as soon as I lost my sight completely, I think what really saved me was that my sister had a friend in university who was blind. So she knew that being blind was not like the end of the world. So they took me to a special school far away from where I lived, and I had to board at the age of 7.5. And actually, I was excited because one thing I did observe when I did lose my sight was that my mum kind of didn't let me do anything, so I couldn't run around and jump around and fall. And I thought it was going to be so much fun to go to a school where I'd never been to boarding school before. And I was like, wow, a whole house full of children would just run riot. That's what I thought. So I was so happy. And in Nigeria, boarding school for blind people is very strict because Nigerians have this mindset that as a blind person, you will be exploited in the world. So toughening you up was better than mollycoddling you. So we did a lot of chores, and I learned how to sweep the floor and make my bed, and, you know, you got the cane if you didn't do the right thing properly and stuff like that. And I think for me, coming from a background where I was really, really pampered at home, it was a huge shock to the system. But for my secondary education, there was no special school. So I had to go to mainstream. And that primary school's job was to prepare me for mainstream so that I wasn't a bit of a wimp when I got there. So I got there with the hatred of sighted people in mind, because that's what my primary school kind of prepared.
What's fascinating about your story, Victoria, is that it actually, in a lot of ways, seems a lot more forward-thinking about people who have sight loss, rather than just mollycoddling, as is the case, I think, in the UK. I mean, I've not experienced specialist education, but I have seen a lot of and met a lot of children that who've become adults as a result of specialist education, and the mannerisms and the ways that people are. You can often tell someone who's been through specialist education, which is always interesting.
Yes.
John, Ram, what's your experience been?
So I was born with a condition and was totally blind by the age of 10 months. And I'm a bit older than you guys. So I'm 52, which puts me into sort of school age at the end of the 60s. But I think in the UK at that point, there was very little thought about schooling in mainstream. So I went to specialist school from when I was five, ended up in St. Vincent's in Liverpool. And then when I got to secondary school age, they sent me to Worcester, which was the place to go, apparently, at the time.
I went and to Worcester.
Did you? Well, there you go.
Yeah.
Well, all the best people. No.
Yes, we did.
For me, it was just normal. It was completely normal to go to boarding school. People are sort of horrified about it now. You went from the age of five or whatever, but to me it was absolutely normal and a great experience, generally speaking, for me. So I did that right through till 18, A-levels, and generally I found it okay. Now, the thing is then, obviously stuff started to change because the prevailing wind said you had to educate in mainstream if possible. I've got four daughters, and one of them can't see. She's now 20. So she started off in mainstream school and did mainstream primary and junior. That was good. Mainstream secondary support was good, but possibly too good. She decided she wanted to go to Worcester for GCSEs. But actually, I think it was a bit of a shock to her system as well. I think it was a bit tough for her. So it sort of worked for her, but actually the other thing I think is that Worcester had changed a lot from when I was there. And it was interesting listening to Victoria talking about the sort of toughening up process, as she called it, which I think is a great thing and absolutely necessary in some ways. I mean, how you do it is a different matter, but it's absolutely essential that you're able to cope when you're out in the world.
Absolutely. Well, we'll get back into that conversation shortly here on the podcast.
The Daily Connect podcast.
Now to our Society of the Week. And as it's National Braille Week, we thought we'd look into something a bit unusual surrounding Braille. I mean, the obvious would be around books or reading or something like that. But actually, let's talk about chess. Now, Chris Ross is a chess champion, and because of the Braille Chess Association, managed to get himself involved in Braille chess for a number of years, and he's been telling us all about him and the association.
Essentially, the Braille Chess Association is the vehicle and organisation which promotes interaction for visually impaired people with people with full normal sight within league or tournament chess. So we facilitate blind people in basically playing or being able to play on the same level playing field as normal players. We provide equipment which is tactile for specialist Braille chess boards. We give the accessories, like things like chess clocks, talking chess clocks or analog. We also provide coaching and training methods and give people opportunities to play in different various leagues. The site of Chess World's extraordinarily large. In the Braille Chess Association of England, we have about 250 members, but obviously that's expanding all the way through worldwide. I would say a country of our size is a couple of hundred. It's a game where there's no real difference between the blind person and the sighted person. So if a blind person has the interest of chess, and if they've found the means to get involved, I would say it's a very high percentage who actually succeed and actually go on, you know, to flourish, about 75% onwards, I would say. I've been for over 20 years, so it's been an incredibly long journey. Chess is quite, you know, it's an emotional game and allows you to go to different places in the world. I came from northeast of England, having no, you know, means, you know, playing in big tournaments. Getting involved with an association like this gives you the tools to learn, gives you access to other things, and then allows you to expand on that and go to different places, different cultures, play different people. It's a remarkable feat. You know, I've actually become a master within the game, you know, by this long journey, going through playing in local clubs, going into local tournaments, going into the local British Championship, and then going into what, the Olympiad, which is the Olympic version of chess. In chess, you for that qualification process, and you get a ranking. I've managed to succeed so well that I've obtained that title. It just shows you that blind people can and do succeed.
Chris Ross there from the Braille Chess Association telling us more about the society. Do check it out. The Braille Chess Association. Go on, Google that and see what you find. Sounds quite interesting, doesn't it? And of course, if you want your society to be represented, if you maybe are involved in a local society or have been supported by one, then email us radio@rnib.org.uk and your organisation could be Society of the Week next week.
The Daily Connect Podcast.
Let's go back to our conversation this week all around specialist versus mainstream education. What was your experience? Did you like your experience? Did you think that perhaps going to mainstream school would have been better if you'd gone to specialist, for example? Well, we posed this question to our three panellists this week on the programme, and well, we've had some interesting conversations so far. Let's continue it now with Stacey, John and Victoria, who join us on the line. Stacey, I'll come back to you first. Talk to me a little bit about your experience. Do you think that the experience you had, in your case it was mainstream education, do you think that was the best experience you could have had, and did you enjoy it?
So for me personally, I'm glad that I got the experience that I did. I made some fantastic friends. I had a wonderful time overall. And, you know, I did what I accomplished what I needed to, which was, you know, to complete the subjects in order to go to university. So I had a fear, and I guess part of me still does, but I wonder if it's moved on. That thing you said about you can tell someone who went to a specialist school, mm. Sometimes you can, for me, I think I would worry that that would have happened. So I think, and people can correct me, that I don't stand out in any way. So
but can I ask you a question? When you say the mannerisms were different, did you think Steve meant it in a negative way or a positive way?
Well, I mean, I think obviously we have to be careful, because it's very individual, and there are a lot of people who went to special school who, you know, are just like you and me, and everyone's different. Yes. I think society sees anyone, any difference, as something to be feared, and I think that is a shame. So, you know, if there's a mannerism that perhaps is not common, then I think that could have an effect on whether or not, you know, you get the job that you've interviewed for. Or and it shouldn't, really. It shouldn't make any difference. But I think society are still quite judgmental.
Yeah, I think we've got to be fair here. You know, I think you've been very diplomatic, Stacey.
Yeah.
I think, you know, what you're saying is that, you know, it is an individual thing. But let's be honest about it. You know, if you end up, as a result of being at specialist school, that you end up having a rocking as part of your, you know, makeup, that you rock back and forward all the time and those kind of things. A lot of blind people do. You know, and you know, we've maybe all had a bit of it in our lives. I have a weird thing with my head. That sounds wrong, but, you know, a weird thing with my head where, you know, I sort of float from side to side because of the nystagmus I've got, and I'm always trying to check myself for it. But what I'm aware of is that people who come from, and it's not everyone, of course it's not everyone, but there are some people who come from specialist education, it seems, who never are never able to check themselves as a result of that.
Yeah, but can I say something? When I was in the Nigerian specialist school, any mannerism that was considered weird was knocked out of you. And I feel that there were some approaches that Nigerians took that was really out aimed to prepare you so that when you went out there, you were fighting with, you know, you were fighting on an equal playing field. Mm. And what I observed when I actually went to New College, you know, Worcester, it was a wonderful place with all the facilities and everything in place. But I just think that there was perhaps a bit too much help and too much on the emotional side, very much mollycoddling. You know, the staff were really nice. And in fact, I almost saw them as parents. And I thought, wow, like, I didn't know human beings could be created to be so wonderful. It made me feel so safe and so complacent about everything. If I'd been there for more than 2 years, I'd hate the world.
That's my point, though. That is partly my concern as well for those people who come out of specialist education.
Yeah,
they've had such a mollycoddling that actually is it a case that, you know, they fear the world. And when something doesn't go their way,
They can't cope with it.
Can't cope.
Yeah.
I think there's I did visit one of the boarding schools. A couple of things struck me. One of them, going back to what we were saying earlier about behaviours, there were a couple of people eating mashed potato with their hands.
What?
They were not being corrected.
New College wouldn't have tolerated that. That's one thing I was sure of.
Yeah, they weren't being corrected.
Yeah.
Okay. So that really scared me. I didn't want to be that person.
No, that's basically absolutely right. I think, and the thing is, for me, there's a couple of things there. It's a combination of the education and the family background as well.
Exactly.
So lots of parents, I think, are very overprotective. You know, my mum had a fantastic policy. She said, if I can't see what he's doing, I'm not going to worry about it. Which was great because I got up to all sorts of things. But the other thing they constantly did, given I say bear in mind that I'm totally blind, they constantly said, look at the person you're talking to, you know, use your knife and fork, you know, don't do silly things. I wasn't quite into Victoria's phrase about having it knocked out of me, but it was certainly educated.
Well, I didn't mean physically, but they
sure.
do talk you. Yeah.
But
yeah.
But the other thing you've got to bear in mind, I think, is that in a lot of specialist schools now, because of the environment where people are encouraged to educate in mainstream, the specialist schools have become, I think, a bit desperate, and they've taken people with all kinds of disabilities. Now, when I said desperate, I didn't mean that in a bad way. I meant they struggle
they
to populate
the school
their
alive.
School. Yeah. They struggle to populate their school with people who just have visual impairments. So they end up having a number of difficulties, you know, maybe autism or other things, which might tilt people towards some of these mannerisms. And there were some pretty weird people at Worcester, in fairness. But there are probably weird people in most schools.
Yeah,
there are. But you see, in my defense of Worcester as well, because even though I say that there was all this mollycoddling, I'd had the toughening up from Nigeria. But one thing I also did learn in Worcester that I don't think I could have picked up on in mainstream were my rights as an individual, as the blind person, being able to ask for what I need and being able to know what I need and understand the difference between my rights and my responsibilities. I think they were very good at teaching that and making you feel assertive and, you know, that you count as well. Because when I went to mainstream in Nigeria, my experience was totally different. I mean, I did not experience bullying from the teachers. That's one thing I will say. They were excellent. And the things they didn't know, they asked you. But they also, again, did not mollycoddle you because they felt you got into the school by merit and you had to be, you know, you had to get an education out of it. But the children, oh my goodness, I met a variety of human beings. Some were extremely nice. Some took the mick out of me. And yes, I was integrated, but it didn't mean that all the kids I went to school with ended up my friends. I'm only in touch with two people. So you can see that, yes, the school did try to integrate, but it didn't work in the society.
That's fascinating. I think thinking about parents choosing schools for children, for me, it's the important thing is that they look at all the options. And we know that some local authorities don't even tell you what options are around.
Oh, yeah.
So, definitely. You know, if you have a VI child, you need to force, if you like, ensure that your local authority gives you all the information that's available.
Yeah.
And you need to trawl the internet and have a look around and, you know, make sure that you know, because they are obliged to give you the information about what's available, even if it is out of the county, but they don't always do it.
Stacey, any final thoughts?
Yeah, it's very interesting, actually, on the point about mollycoddling, to go back to that, because the biggest problem I had at mainstream school was that I was far too mollycoddled.
Yes.
It also happens. Yeah.
It really did. And it was a big issue for me, because I remember when I first, you know, the first day, the support staff that were there said, right, you have to come and eat your lunch with us.
Yeah.
And I said, what? Yes. No, I'm going to eat with
your friends.
And
yeah.
It was a battle every day. And I would run away. They would take me to lunch. They would turn their backs and I'd run. And I'd go with my friends. And time again, it didn't stop, actually, until I was about 16 or 17. And every day, every single subject, you had a support teacher in the classroom with you. And it was difficult to interact with your peers, because you always had essentially a teacher by your side.
By your side.
You could never just relax. You could never be a kid, really, in that environment. And I think that's something that parents should consider when they're, you know, mainstream versus specialist school. Get involved in not just the education, but the overall experience that their kids would have in the school. Look at the whole picture.
I think it's really important that parent, because I think what really makes such forms a blind child's life is their parents' approach to their disability. And I feel that when every child is diagnosed with a disability, that parents should actually get a lot of counselling from well-informed people. And I can't stress that more, because I think sometimes actually the parents are the last to accept what's happened. I don't know, from my point of view, it would be cruel to throw a blind child in a mainstream school at the age of 5, 6, because that child is learning to be a blind person. And putting them in an environment where they're already vulnerable, the child is not going to be getting a clear view of what life is really meant to be like, because they don't know what they need. They're still trying to figure that out. I think childhood is tough enough as it is. And yeah. I think it's better if the child is educated about their disability and how well to deal with it, then join the mainstream system in secondary school, I think.
Sorry, I was going to just second quickly what Stacey was saying. One of the key factors for my daughter deciding to go to Worcester was to get away from the support. Now, the support was really, really well-meaning. They really wanted to help her. But she was admitting that, you know, there were times when she let the support worker do her work for her. Because, you know, when you're 14 and someone offers to do that, why would you not?
Yeah, exactly.
How would you not? Exactly.
But she knew it was bad for her as well. And so that was one of the factors in her leaving mainstream.
Well, we've probably left people with more questions than answers. I think that's fair to say. You know, I think ultimately it is about a conversation like this, and it's about people having conversations with other people who are blind and partially sighted who've been through it themselves. I think that often helps. So, you know, lots of food for thought. I will say, just on that point, Stacey, around eating separately at school time, lunch times, I have to tell you very briefly that I had a wonderful experience where in my first week at secondary school, I was introduced to the visually impaired table at my school, where we all had to sit and eat together.
Table that couldn't sit.
And it was a table.
We had that in Nigeria, yeah. In the secondary school, the blind table, that's what it was called.
Yeah. And it was a table right at the top of the dining hall. So all the other kids were staring at you, sitting at their tables, thinking, why have they got their own table, that big table at the end? And of course, it was right next to the teachers, so they could look after us.
The Daily Connect
Mainstream
podcast.
Versus specialist, the debate goes on.
It's time
on,
to
guys.
Find out
really
what you've been saying
your
about the programme and the
it's
features
pleasure.
And discussions we've been having. Chris Wallace is back in the studio. Good to have you here, Chris.
Hello, Stephen. Yes, I am. I'm sat here in your studio once again for your views.
Yeah, but before we get to that, let's talk about me, because that's more important. I've got the cold. Did I tell you this?
Have I
mentioned this?
No.
Have I not mentioned it to you today?
I don't care. You work.
Charming.
Work hard. And then we'll take care of everything else.
Right.
See,
is
when
that encouragement? I'm trying
when
to
When I
that
used
out.
To get cold, I would get a bottle of a healthy, energized fizzy drink and grapes. And that was it. I would be off to school, but I would have my grapes and my fizzy drink. So
what?
I'll maybe pick you up something at lunchtime.
Right. Okay. Let's just maybe draw this out a little bit. So when you're not well, what does your good lady say to you?
get to work.
Yeah, that's what I get as well. I came here for sympathy. Uh-huh. This is what I get.
No.
Thank you, Chris.
No sympathy here. You'll get sympathy from Quigley the guide dog. And
that's about it. Yeah. Right, time for your views.
Absolutely. Well, yesterday you had on the show Claire, who was giving you a demonstration of the Orbit refreshable Braille display. Well, we've already had our first review from Joe via Facebook, who says, very impressed with the design of the Orbit, and it's such a low price compared to most other Braille devices. So yeah. That's good.
Very good. It is a brilliant machine for the money. Uh-huh. Still a lot of money.
It is.
But it's, and it absolutely is a considered purchase. But compared to the products out there that go from 1,000 up to sometimes even £4,000, this is huge.
Can we expect to hear more of this on Tech Talk?
You will hear lots about it. We're actually hoping to get an Orbit Reader 20 into the studio so we can actually try it, because I am in the process of learning Braille, and for me this is the device that will help me do it.
Yeah. Well, so, you said you did learn when you were younger, but you gave up on it.
I did, stupidly at school, because you know, when you're at school you think you know everything, although I don't think that ever stopped, really. Again, my wife told me that just the other day. But no, I think I should have stuck with it. I did grade one, which is kind of your alphabet and your punctuation, the basics. Grade two is what they call contracted Braille, where you essentially take one cell of Braille and that becomes a word. Uh-huh. So you can crunch down all the amount of cells. Instead of having a book that's about 5,000 volumes, you can get into 500 volumes. Uh-huh. So, yeah.
Well, interestingly, that's exactly what our Daily Connect poll is about today. It is, well, this week, do you use Braille? So far, and there's still plenty of time to vote, folks, Facebook, we have 84% on no and 16% on yes, and it's quite similar over in Twitter, 80% no, 20% yes. So there's still time to vote.
And the numbers are quite healthy on those votes.
They are,
as well.
Yes. Well, I mean, the Facebook one is based on 38 votes.
And that's interesting. Those numbers do tend to marry up. There's a stat that goes around which says 4% of people who are completely, well, not so much completely blind, but people who are registered blind would use Braille. 4%. It's a very, very, very low number. But I think that's partly the problem. That's what this new device is aiming to get over. Because the problem is accessing the technology to use Braille. Getting a Perkins Braille is quite awkward these days, if you still want to use one of those. And getting your hands on something that's £3,000-4,000, why? I mean, you could buy a small car for the cost of a Braille display. That's ridiculous. So, yeah, this could be good news and could hopefully close that gap. So, yeah, more goodness to come.
And keep those votes coming and keep those comments coming. We're going to go into more detail about the Daily Connect poll on your views on Thursday. But there's a couple of other things I wanted to share with you, Stephen. Last week on the forum, you had blind versus partial sight conversation.
It wasn't a competition. I'd like to stress that. It
was
wasn't a competition.
Throw down the gloves.
No, it was saying, you know, well, you know, not versus in that sense, but more a case of the experience of blindness versus the experience of partial sight.
Well, Nadia got in touch via email, and this actually leads into our next news item as well. But she said, I've just been listening to your item on whether partial sight is better than blindness. I can't really comment on that as I've been totally blind since birth, but I was interested to hear the lady explaining the problems she had explaining partial sight. I have the same problems explaining I have no vision. Just recently, I got diagnosed with glaucoma. I've been in and out of hospital for the last 2 months, and every time I go, they insist on doing a vision test, even though my notes state clearly that I have no sight. Mm. They seem to think that doesn't include the ability to see light, and they appear puzzled when they shine a light in my eye and I tell them I can't see it. And then she goes on to, incidentally, I thought the advert by Specsavers was very powerful because nobody knew why I have no sight. The doctors told my parents it wasn't worth me having regular eye tests. Stephen, you've got a similar thing to this as well.
Yeah.
If I had, then maybe my glaucoma would have been picked up earlier, along with all the other damage that's occurred to my eyes over the years. Because I have no vision, it's only just started to affect me. The first thing I knew about it was waking up in a lot of pain. I have undergone surgery, and I often wonder if I'd had regular eye tests, perhaps this could have caught and dealt with the problems before they got so bad. She says she's loving the Daily Connect podcast, so thanks for downloading that, Nadia. The Specsavers advert was a huge talking point last week. Obviously, the advert itself very powerful. It asked fully sighted people, how much would you sell your eyes for? And it got very emotional responses. Now, Lynn Nicholson says she's in two minds about it. Yes, optician appointments can save sight. However, sight loss isn't the end of the world. I became legally blind. The cause of my sight loss was diagnosed just over 2 years ago. And yes, it took a little while, but I'm back to confident and independent. Good to hear, Lynn. Norma says, hard-hitting ad, but good. It was an optician that saved me from total sight loss. And hey, many happy memories have been made since with the little sight I've been left with. Well done to the Aussies for that Specsavers ad. But Anna Marshall had a completely different view. She said, I don't like those ads at all. Just a lot of sighted people telling how scared they are about losing their sight, and many for mundane reasons. How is any of that going to make them be more comfortable around the visually impaired? They'll just be scared and go to Specsavers, whereas RNIB's new ads or Norwegian Blind Association's old ads have much more humour. And with those, realising that not all cane or dog users are totally blind, and what would the world look like if you had AMD or glaucoma or retinopathy, that is more helpful for the public.
Wow. Well, I mean, this is it. You know, it's about, as I said last week, it's about this issue of how you want to be seen as a person. You know, I don't want to be seen as some kind of victim, or that my life is lesser than someone else's because of vision.
And as Anna points out there, there's a marked difference between Specsavers ad campaign in Australia and RNIB's new campaign, which is absolutely full of humour. Mm-hmm. The Specsavers one was brilliant. All pushing for the emotion. Yeah. It was all emotion. It was all raw. It was all gritty. And this could be apocalyptic almost. Whereas RNIB's new campaign very much relying on humour.
Yeah. Hear me singing at karaoke. That's apocalyptic. Chris, you're back on Thursday with your views.
I certainly will. We're going to go deep diving into the Daily Connect poll. So keep those votes and comments coming. Thanks.
Thank you, Chris. That's it for the Daily Connect podcast for today. Thank you so much for downloading. And we'll be back tomorrow from 5 on the podcast, on air 10 till 12. Catch you then.
The Daily Connect podcast.